Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company on a Wednesday, live at Battleborne Injury Lawyers. We'll talk to former public servant, conference chaos insider, legal insider, Justin Watkins, in just a little bit. Griffin's back in the Findlay Toyota Studios. He's the company today. Good spots. I'm excited about today. We got the NBA back. Still seems kind of weird that they're taking days off here. Not the NBA alone, but the NHL. But whatever. We've been dealing with this for like 10 years, so I don't know why I act like I'm surprised. But NBA is back tonight, and we got a good setup here. I think this is going to be a good series. I think there's a lot of people out there who believe, Griffin, that OKC is going to roll from here. I know you're a Pacers guy. You're rooting for the Pacers. I think we saw enough in game one, even though they fell behind. They pulled off the comeback. But I think there's enough good things about the Pacers. And I think a return home is going to be a massive deal. I think the crowd is going to be freaking completely lit. And the Pacers can make this a series. Can they win it? I don't know. But I don't think they're going to get blown out in the series and lose this 1-5. And we'll talk about the crowd in a couple minutes. But I think the Pacers have a shot to make this a good series. I like OKC. I was probably one of the first people months ago saying, hey, this is the next dynasty in OKC. But being a dynasty doesn't mean that when you win your first title, you win it 4-1. This could be a tough one for the Thunder, and we'll see what happens tonight on the road.
Yeah, I see this being a very competitive series. I mean, you look back at game one, it was a crazy come-from-behind victory by the Pacers, but people will look at that and say that's not reliable to dictate how the rest of the series will go. But then you look at the fact that in that game they had so many turnovers in the beginning as well. They overcame so much to come back in that game. Game two, the OKC jumped on them. They were at home. It was to be expected. So now they go back to Indiana. Let's go, Steve. That bet's still going, man. I'm still holding out hope.
You have 2-1 in hand, which you should have gotten actually like 2.5 to one in hand. But tonight's game is Pacers +5.5. Total is 227.5. And obviously so much of it revolves around getting Halliburton off. If he's going to have a series where he's just not that aggressive. And, we'll go back to the Anthony Edwards example. When I say not aggressive, part of that is OKC's playing awesome defense. So they kind of stymie you. They frustrate you. They're brilliant at defensive coordinating your strengths and taking them away with a myriad of defenders. But, Halliburton as a guy, and the Pacers haven't had a guy score 20-plus points in this series. Halliburton is a guy who was, certainly capable of going for 25, 30, 35. 13 shots a game, not good enough. He's got 14 points and 17 points in the two games. Frankly, the second game was kind of a little bit phony because he had 12 of the 17 way late in the game as they were, just trying to put some points up on the board and get right, try some new things. Now, some of the new things they tried might work. Maybe a little more Halliburton off the ball. Not give him responsibilities where they have a target on his back as soon as he crosses midcourt. But listen, the Pacers, when they win, he scores. And when he's had at least 20 in the playoffs, they're 7-1. When he doesn't get 20, they're just 6-4. And he's got to shoot. The numbers bear it out as well. If he takes 13 shots like he did in the first two games, each of the first two games he took 13 shots, then they're 5-4 in the playoffs. When he takes 15 or more, it works. They're 8-1, so they have to get him off. The Pacers have got to take advantage of SGA when he's off the floor, and it's not like he's playing 23 minutes a night. These spots are going to be kind of limited, and frankly, I thought that was one of the reasons in game one that Indy was able to make small strides with about 10 minutes left in the game down to 6, and then they really poured it on down the stretch to pull off the comeback. But when SGA was out, the lead didn't grow. Jalen Williams looked uncomfortable. No one else was scoring. The rebounding wasn't that good. So when SGA is out, the Pacers have to do some good things. X-Factor is going into the game tonight, and I'm going to call him an X-Factor, but everyone knows how good the kid is, or people are learning how good the kid is in Chet Holmgren, who certainly doesn't look the role of a super important player. I guess if you put him back in 1984, 7-1 and 208, you could get away with that because everyone was a beanpole in spite of the fact that everyone has changed their memories, they've erased their memories about what big weightlifters everyone was in the 80s. But he's the kind of guy who, one, is awesome around the rim, both ends of the floor, but he really is one of the keys defensively because he's so freaking long. And if the design for most of these teams that don't play power basketball, and OKC can go big, but big means it's Hartenstein at, you know, 6'11 and 250 and 208-pound Holmgren. It's not exactly true bigs because Chet's more comfortable as a stretch four, but on defense he allows them so many liberties because of the ultimate goal here is switch as many positions as possible, maybe four or even five. Now, when Hartenstein's out there, they're not going to switch five, but Holmgren being able to switch on pick and roll, and Hartenstein's pretty good as well, those guys changed really everything in terms of pick and roll defense, and they were really good in game number two. All right, so what's the arena going to be like tonight? I'm joking when I say this, so understand what I'm saying, but will we have a raucous atmosphere in Indy, or will John Cougar Mellencamp get his way and everyone will be really polite and show some Indiana hospitality?
Man, I'm really hoping the Indiana Stadium, I hope they lean more Pat McAfee than Mellencamp. It's the first game in the finals back at home court. You really got to make ruckus. You really got to give your team an edge and try to get that first win back at home. I'm expecting some crazy atmosphere out there in Indiana.
Again, the number's 5.5. Total is 227. Tip should be right around 540 between the Pacers as they try to take a 2-1 lead, or OKC tries to take a 2-1 lead. Very interesting around the rest of the NBA. The offseason is always of massive interest. Not so much overshadowing the finals like it kind of is this time around until I think people really jump on board here. And by the way, we're going to update you on our ratings bet that we had last week. We were talking about the NBA finals ratings. So far, they've been a little on the under number that we set, but Justin Watkins will get us updated on that in the 4 o'clock hour. The Knicks being the Knicks, and the fact that a lot of major media outlets are based in New York or the Northeast, the Tibbs firing got a ton of attention. And so even during the finals, people are curious to see what's going to happen with this head coaching position. Well, we had some developments overnight. We had debated the other day, actually the last 2 days we debated, about Jason Kidd. If you have your choice, you can stay in Dallas or you can go to New York and coach the Knicks. You can coach the Mavs and coach Cooper Flagg and Anthony Davis and a pretty good young core. You can go to the Knicks where expectations are high. But when you win, the reward is very high. I don't know from day to day if James Dolan is a good owner, competitive owner, wants to win. I don't know. He's got ulterior motives all the time. I don't know if ownership is officially good in Dallas yet. We have to see what they look like moving forward. But they certainly have some players to work with, and they're going to get Cooper Flagg. And depending on your opinion, maybe Cooper Flagg is the next top 10 player in the league, or he's just an average contributor, above average contributor, top 75 player in the league. So that's what Jason Kidd had to weigh. But whether this was him telling the Mavs or the Mavs just said, you know what, we appreciate you, the Mavs have turned down the Knicks' request to interview Jason Kidd, which they have every right to do. The only way this was going to get done is if, one, the Mavs said yes, two, Kidd was interested, and then three, they'd have to work out compensation. The Knicks also reached out to Minnesota with Chris Finch, turned down by Minnesota. The Knicks from there, and we told you last week, these were some of the rumors out there that, we didn't really tell you. All I did was relay the message that I had seen from, I think it was Alan Hahn, on Get Up, that's Greeny's ESPN show, where he said, don't be surprised, it's about 5 days ago, don't be surprised if the Knicks are making a run at a sitting coach. So they made a run at Kidd. Apparently they've made a run at Finch. And the other guy that we mentioned was Ime Udoka. And if you're the Rockets, no, you don't want Udoka to walk. He's been great so far. They're on the cusp of maybe being, you know, the next OKC or up there with OKC. Certainly their regular season wins were up there. But now you're going to see New York kind of freak out about this. You're going to see fans kind of freak out about this. P.J. Carlissimo, who coached in the league and is from the area, as a New Jersey native, just talked about the firing of Tibbs, where the Knicks are going here, and he still kind of doesn't understand what the Knicks are doing.
Not on a coach. First of all, the Knicks, that's the Knicks. They don't know what they're doing. They're their own worst enemy. They've been their own worst enemy. They make big changes. I didn't necessarily love them. Bobby Marks said there was no way they could have kept Hartenstein. I thought that really hurt them. I thought letting Dante go was a mistake also. I thought those two guys were so good for them last year. I just think that he did a great job. You can criticize, all right, he doesn't use the bench, blah, blah, blah.
So those are legit concerns. The concerns that were leaked out about not using the bench, too much usage of Jalen Brunson and other starters, no solution for a sagging pick and roll game with Cat and Brunson. Those are reasons to move on from Tibbs, but man, they better have a good replacement ready to go. And already, like I said, New York is going to freak out over this because why not, right? If you're in the media, you're going to stir the pot on this thing. It's already being labeled the coaching quandary. I will step in for a little common sense. There's nothing wrong with making a run at exceptional level coaches and maybe even whiffing five or six times. It doesn't mean that the Knicks are disorganized. It means that they have a list. They're going down that list. Eventually, they'll get someone they want. It may not be the big name that Knicks fans want or NBA fans want, but they're going to get a good coach. It just may take a little bit of time, but I always love like immediate panic. We've seen this on the collegiate level, and we've been through this here in Vegas with UNLV. Sometimes coaching searches, you have to go seven or eight deep, and there's nothing wrong with firing at and trying for, you know, five amazing candidates, and then you still like the other candidates, and there's an order. You make your run, you come up a little bit short, but it is going to be funny to see who they get because the original odds that we talked about last week had Mike Malone on the top of the list, who seems to have fallen out of the mix, but who knows? He could come back in. Dan Hurley was kind of a phony name put up there just for craps and giggles. Johnny Bryant is a name you keep hearing over and over again. Taylor Jenkins is interesting with the success he had with Memphis. I'm not going to say a younger guy, a guy who hasn't had the chance yet, and Sam Cassell is interesting. I don't think it's going to be JVG, Jeff Van Gundy, nor Mike Brown. Those are some of the guys in the original list. The updated list now is Knicks to hire Johnny Bryant -200, Mike Malone 2-1, Jeff Van Gundy 6-1. Jay Wright has already pulled his name out multiple times. I forget who the source on that one was, but he's 9-1. Danny Hurley's 12-1. They're not doing it. Taylor Jenkins is 14-1. And then, you know, the name that's interesting on the very bottom and interesting from this standpoint, Mark Jackson is 50-1. He is a native New Yorker. He played for the Knicks. That Tibbs discussion last week branched off into this. Hey, we've seen organizations like, say, the Bulls, who had Doug Collins with Jordan. They got to a certain level. They needed another guy to take them to the next level, and it's happened from time to time. In comes Phil Jackson, and then they win titles. And someone tried to use the example of, well, you know, look at Steve Kerr. The groundwork was laid by Mark Jackson. And I will continue to counter that by saying, if Mark Jackson laid the groundwork for one of the most powerful dynasties in recent years, designed the team, helped build the team that was dominant, and outside of Draymond Green would have won another title had he not shacked the fool in that series against the Cavs, if Mark Jackson did such a great job, why can't Mark Jackson get a job? He is 50-1, and odds aren't everything, but he has almost no shot at the Knicks job. He hasn't sniffed anything else, but he was the guy who helped build the Warriors. Don't believe that for a second. Sorry, Mark Jackson's taking strays, but that's the way it is. On the way back, I got to get you updated on what's going on. Groundbreaking, also some baseball chatter, and I try to remind everyone, I'm fired up that the A's are coming. I like that Major League Baseball is coming here. We invested a lot of money in this, and we'd like to get you updated not only on what goes on the field, but also around baseball and the health of baseball. Another good example on the way back of making a big investment with tax dollars, and I wonder how many people who actually voted yes are public servants, actually scanned what baseball is, who the A's are, who John Fisher is, because there are dark clouds on the way, and guess what? It's too late. They're going to break ground on this stadium in about 2 weeks. The stadium is going to start getting built. The A's are going to be here in 28 or 29. Doesn't matter what condition baseball is in then. We're in.
It's Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
You know, we talked Raiders yesterday with RJ Clifford, who does the Autumn Windbags podcast. And RJ, like many Raiders fans, was lamenting over the fact that the Raiders have a good amount of salary cap space. Which, by the way, if you actually look at the whole list of available salary cap space, the Raiders are in decent position. They have a lot next year. But, you know, they're like top 12. They got like $38 million available. There's lots of teams with lots of money. So I think everyone's waiting for the market to kind of settle down. And in less than 10 minutes, I'll tell you about some changes, maybe a signing with the Raiders that could help them. And a couple of X factors. Two of them spoke today to the media. So that's coming up on the Raiders in less than 10. So we are counting down. It's very exciting. To the groundbreaking, the ceremony on June 23rd for the A's in their new stadium at that Trop site, 8 a.m. again, June 23rd. And we're all watching baseball. We're all keeping an eye on it. We're keeping an eye on the Sacramento situation, how that's going, if the A's are going to have to come earlier. Is that going to work out there? Are they going to have to go somewhere else? It's interesting. How competitive are they? Good to see Nick Kurtz is back now. So that's part of the future. You want those young guys out there. Hopefully Denzel Clark can get the bat to match the glove and the fielding. He had an amazing home run he robbed the other night. But we also talk a lot on the show about the health of baseball and this confusion by a lot of, I don't even know what's baseball fans anymore. I think most baseball fans finally smartened up, started listening to something I've been talking about for 20 plus years, that a salary cap and evil empires are not the problem, or the lack of a salary cap. They've got a soft cap. And the evil empires of different eras who try to win, spend money, get players, re-sign players, that's not the problem with baseball. It's the bottom of baseball. And it's been that way for a long time. And even with that, with pathetic owners, the sport is incredibly balanced, and we've seen upper mobility from a lot of organizations to the point where we've got 15 different organizations winning championships in this century. But there is a storm looming, which should be of concern to us because we have invested a lot of money in this thing. This is not the NFL. We invested a boatload of money in the NFL. Basically, that was an entrance fee to the biggest sport this country has. It was an exorbitant number. We got a pretty good stadium out of it. We got a team. Like, we don't have to have baseball now. We certainly don't have to have this organization. I think we'd be a candidate for expansion. But we're very convenient for Rob Manfred and the other owners, as one of the cities that actually stepped up to help build a stadium for an owner. We've made a major investment here. David Sampson used to run the Marlins, does a really good podcast, talks hardcore business and baseball and really every sport. And he had Ken Rosenthal on, and Rosenthal's a longtime baseball media member. And there is something looming coming up. While baseball, I think for the most part, like, I have complaints about the way they market things. I think their stars should be bigger, household names. I think their primary concern shouldn't always be best stadium deals and making sure that that's taken care of before, like I said, marketing the game. Listen to Sampson and Rosenthal kind of bounce around what the next 2 years could look like, and that there are some hawkish owners who, in spite of the fact that baseball is doing well, it's a $12 billion industry, it's certainly big internationally, there are some owners, probably led by some of the guys I just talked about a minute ago, who I think are ruining baseball. They want to shut the whole friggin' thing down.
That the drumbeats for the next stoppage started earlier this time than they have in my memory. And I've been doing this since 87, when there was a work stoppage every 3 or 4 years. I don't know why it's like this, but it seems like the owner's thirst for a salary cap has never been greater. And maybe I'm a victim of recency bias here, because that thirst has always been there. But it seems like now there is a percentage of owners that are willing to shut down the sport to get what they want. $12 billion industry, why would you want to shut it down? You're not the NFL. You're not coming back so quickly in the eyes of the public.
That is really key at the end there, because baseball really took it in the freaking chops when they shut down the game in the past. And this time, they really don't have the public on their side. And like I said, I think a lot of people have smartened up, and they see what's going on in cities like Pittsburgh and to a certain extent with John Fisher for years and years. And now the Rockies, Reinsdorf, who, by the way, is going to get, who knows, the final price. Of Jerry Reinsdorf is going to walk away, or his family's going to walk away, whether he's here or not. They're going to walk away with like $6 or $7 billion for the White House. What is the financial panic? This shutdown could be coming as soon as next year, 2026. And then we're going to open a stadium 2 years later than that, after what could be a shutdown and a lengthy period off from baseball. Does everyone feel good about getting into this business? Everyone feel good about the momentum we're going to have, baseball is going to have, trying to open a new stadium? That is not a very good sign. And I just wish, it's the way the baseball owners have always been. It's always been this, hey, they lost out on the big battle in the 70s. With free agency, the players actually have had rights for 50 plus years, and it eats away at them. And like generationally, it eats away at them. The kids of owners who feel like they got defeated back in the 70s, they still want their freaking revenge. And the scary part is, David Sampson said it, all you need are eight owners to, you know, jerk this thing around. And there are eight owners who don't care about winning, want to cry poor, are rooting against teams that give them money, like the Dodgers, like the Phillies, like the Mets, who spend big money, and they're willing to sacrifice the future of the game. It's a terrible thing, and it's especially terrible for us if, you know, every stadium and event we're getting here, like, we need it moving forward 3 and 4 years, and anything that affects the bullishness of that, the attractiveness of that, is a freaking strike at Las Vegas. So people better start paying attention. Vegas could be in a weird position as we're bringing a team into town, and baseball itself is kind of limping around.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
It's like the football gods were listening to Cofield and Company yesterday. We had on a Raiders fan, a podcaster, media member, RJ Clifford, and he was talking about Raiders, and they have some openings, need some more veterans at linebacker and at defensive back. And meanwhile, in Cincinnati, another one of the possible Cincy screw jobs, Jermaine Pratt, linebacker, team captain, had asked out about 4 months ago. The Bengals let him hang for, and I'm laughing, but it's, you know, it's the Bengals. Let him dangle out there, not knowing his future, for like 4 months. Then we find out yesterday he's being released, and it looks like, according to sources, the Raiders are going to sign him. Adam Hill, our Raiders insider, said that Jermaine Pratt is interesting. He brings leadership and run-stuffing ability when he's right. Raiders keep talking about taking chances on high-ceiling linebackers who could really pay off. If more than one are at their best, the group could be really good. I think the other guy he's referencing there is Devin White. We'll probably try to play some Devin White audio tomorrow. Devin White spoke today. We know that Devin White has a big reputation as a top 10 draft pick and was a pretty good player for a while. Well, he's part of the Raiders. And I'll give you the other X factor. And this should be right up Griffin's alley. Griffin played, you know, defensive line in college, was a big high school star. The Tyree Wilson story is not over yet. This is probably going to be the year that he has to come through. Reports are, and just looking at him, he's gotten bigger physically, which is kind of amazing because he's a behemoth at like 6'6 and 280. I think he's pushing closer to 295, 300. And the design here is, if they can't get him playing time outside, then he's going to play inside. And guess what? Christian Wilkins, we don't know what's going on. He's not out there on the field. He's still recovering from this foot injury from last season. Here's Wilson today talking about another year with the Raiders and being around Max Crosby.
Man, you know, me and Max, I feel like the bond starts in practice. You know, I always, you know, if we doing a look, you know, I always go with Max. I try to give him the best look. He try to give me the best look. And, you know, what they say, iron sharpens iron. You know, he always going to critique me. He's been in the game long. He's been successful. So I always, you know, I ask him, hey, he'd be like, oh, you can do this better. So, you know, I go back and do the rep the better. He tell me, good job. And it's just every day, you know, trying to build and, you know, try to idolize what he has established at the Raiders.
Same DC, lots of different supporting casts in terms of coaches. Pete Carroll's in now, and maybe it's something they can unlock. Griffin, they need it because, you know, they're a little dinged up on the defensive line. And when you take a guy top five or, you know, top 10 in the draft like they did with Tyree Wilson, he's got to be productive at some level. I mean, you know, not turning out is one thing, but not being able to play and be effective, at least in a rotational spot for 35 snaps a game, that's devastating. You can't miss on a first-round pick, and now it's year three.
Yeah, man, Tyree Wilson, I remember the draft when the Raiders picked him up. It was you know, it was a pick where everyone was pretty excited about the prospects of having such a dominant D-line with two great pass rushers and Max Crosby, and Tyree Wilson was supposed to fill that role. His first couple seasons haven't been great, you're right, but at the same time, like we said, like seeing the weight gain he's having, I really think kicking him inside with Wilkins' injury, he could be a factor, Steve. He's got the speed. Now that it looks like he's put on even more size, I think he could fill that role well. And, you know, it would stand that if he can kind of fill that need for however long Wilkins is going to be out, I think he'd be I think he could really earn a permanent spot with this team if he proves that he's versatile and can go all over the line.
And remember, it'll never be forgotten, especially if Tyree Wilson is just a complete bust and doesn't work with the Raiders, that Tyree Wilson went 7th and Jalen Carter went 9th to the Eagles. Yes. On the way back, Ryan McKindle's going to check in from Indiana as Big Mac has some recap and looking forward in the world of MMA after a pretty good UFC 316 fight card.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
We're about 25 minutes away from checking in with Justin Watkins, Conference Chaos Insider, former public servant, legal insider. Lots to get to. A lot of important stuff to get to. Ryan McKinnell's in. He does a weekly check-in with us from Indiana. There's a lot going on in the world of sports and otherwise. It's funny. Last week, Justin Watkins said he was very fired up about the new Pope, that Justin joked that he'd gotten a lot more Catholic recently. So that's a good thing, I guess. As a Chicago guy and a Chicago fan, your reaction to seeing Pope Leo, was he repping with a Chicago hat?
So, yes, first of all. Hi, Steve.
Good, well, that's good.
On this Wednesday. It's like, you know, in the 90s, in the early 90s when we grew up, or when I was growing up, you were growing up too. We were all growing up. But like the White Sox brand.
Of course, yeah.
Know, they brought that black and white hat out, and, you know, Dr. Dre was wearing it, and Tupac was wearing it, and the cultural zeitgeist was behind the White Sox. I'm getting that feeling from the Pope. Now, it's not gangster rap. It's God, and it's Jesus, and it's Catholicism, and I've never really been, you know, I mean, I'm spiritual. I like to be a good person, I think. I try to be a good person, but I've never really been Team Jesus, but this team needs Jesus, and the Pope is apparently a direct line to God, or I believe there's some sort of, you know, relationship there. So, Steve, I said it earlier on social media today. Jesus, take the wheel. Let's go, White Sox. I am all for this rebrand. Never in my life did I ever think a Pope would be a White Sox fan. But you know what? I never thought a president would be either. And we had Obama, right? So, like, I do think it's hilarious. I mean, right now in the current world that we have the first American Pope, like the brand of the USA, I mean, it's been a week. It's been a week, Steve, but he's a White Sox fan. And I, you know what? Let's get it. I'm all for it.
I was going to say his timing was impeccable, because if it was about right now, they'd be like, eh, I don't know about that. One of the great discussions, because you made reference to the fact that you never thought you'd see an American Pope. I never thought I would see offbeat nerds taking over the NFL as coaches. And it's not like a complete takeover, but the guy in Chicago is kind of nerdy, Ben Johnson. I've talked to people who played with him in college. He's a very interesting guy. The ultimate nerd is Mike McDaniel, who played football at Yale, but he went to Yale. He's an alternative guy. And my argument about 3 years ago is, let's see what happens in this traditional desire for coaches to be big galoots and fire and brimstone guys versus the nerds. But there's something about Mike McDaniel. One, his results have been okay, not great. there's also times when I watch him where I'm like, I don't know what he's talking about. I know you noticed that I was wearing a big weed leaf on my head. Like, I am I'm pro marijuana, but there are also times when I watch people and I'm like, wait a second, what's going on here? I just want you to listen to Mike McDaniel talk about Jalen Ramsey and why they haven't traded him yet. I think I know what he's saying, but he also sounds kind of baked.
I don't give a shit about what I feel. I don't even really go down that road of how do I feel about it. My job is to react and control my controllables and make sure that people are moving in one direction appropriately. And so the business is business.
Okay, that actually was a press conference. It was not Mike McDaniel, like, on a couch with snacks strewn all over the couch. What is he talking about? And yeah. What? Listen, that's like very chill for an NFL coach. Like, maybe too chill.
He's high. I mean, I go back years. I mean, you know, we got the vape pens. You see his press conferences. You see his demeanor and his delivery. He went with the South Florida, you know, coke dealer last year with the curly greased up hair. I loved it. Like, I love McDaniel. And if I was a player, I would love to play for McDaniel because he just seems like a fun guy. I would say this. Maybe just wait until the day is over and, like, the cameras aren't on, unless that's the sort of vibe you're going for. Which, again, huge advocate of the green medicine. Don't want to, like, take away from it. I'm just a guy. I'll tell you this. Like, I'm pretty much an everyday user, right? But, like, if I have anything going on, a show, a spot like we're doing today, right? Like, I never indulge because I would never want to ask myself, right, if something went wrong or if I said something that I shouldn't, which it's amazing that I've done all these shows sober for 15 years, right? I would never want to look back and ask what if, right? And so, yes, I don't think there's any doubt. Steve, we've been around. We've lived in Las Vegas for many, many, many years. We've seen a lot of different nighttime situations. That man is not sober. He's not sober. You know what I mean? But I love him nonetheless.
Which, go get it, nerd. Hey, do what you want. Right. Go get it, nerd. Do what you want. But the problem is he is coming off an 8-9 season where they didn't make the playoffs. And I think he has some equity, but I don't know if it's like an endless timeline here. He really needs to succeed. I actually lied. I really did get what he was saying. It's like, it's not my job to think about personnel and trade. So I just, you know, the controllables, that was it was kind of interesting. I'm just going to set this up and say for this year, I am pro Aaron Rodgers. So I want your reaction. No, actually I am. Now that we've seen a couple of days pass, he's in Pittsburgh. He's saying good things about the organization, saying good things about Tomlin. He's talking about things that are good for his soul. He just got married. Ryan McKinnell, Bears fan, where are you now on A-Rod in his final go-round now in Pittsburgh?
You know what's so frustrating about Aaron Rodgers is, like, towards the end, him and Favre, towards the end of their Packers runs, I want to be very clear, especially in the Favre situation, because what would follow was nightmarish and he's a monster, right? But I went from hating them to mildly respecting them. Like, on their way out of Green Bay, I was like, man, I mean, yes, they destroyed us for decades, but they're just so talented and they seem okay as people, right? That I have no choice but to respect them. This dude, Rodgers, is such a tourist in terms of, like, the psychedelic world. This guy goes out and takes ayahuasca a couple times, and now he's talking about ego death, and I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. That dude, the damage he has done to the psychedelic community and trying to co-opt that movement and talk about ego death when he is the most self-serving, egomaniacal, narcissistic, douchey, smell your own fart type of athlete. Like, he is one of the most unlikable people in sports history. And now he's talking about getting married and he's not doing it for his ego. I mean, you've waited time and time again to announce where you're going to go. You keep people waiting on everything. You do a million radio spots. Every girl that you've been with has come out in the media and said being with you is a nightmare. That's probably why he's not telling us who he actually married, right? This guy is consistently always about himself. And I don't believe for one second psychedelics are, you know, the idea of ego death is try to make you're not important. You're a part of this larger cycle. 8 billion people on the world, right? And you know what? That's the number one thing you should have realized. You're not smart. And that's the problem with Aaron Rodgers is he thinks he's the smartest person in the room and he can't admit how stupid he actually is. And that's something psychedelics should teach him. But Aaron Rodgers, for whatever reason, that lesson has gone completely over his head. I can't wait until this dude is out of the NFL, truly, and out of the media and just go up in the mountains somewhere and disappear. I never agree with Terry Bradshaw. I never agree with Terry Bradshaw. I agree with Terry Bradshaw here. That is what Aaron Rodgers is doing. He's bringing me and that Louisiana hillbilly, and I mean that with respect, great Super Bowl champion, right? All that together. I can't believe it.
Well, I asked for an answer, and I got one. There you go. I'm going to go completely different direction. One, I think the Christy Martin story does need to be told, and yes. for her acting, not for her looks or anything else. I'm a giant fan of Sydney Sweeney. I didn't see the two joining forces. Sydney Sweeney is playing Christy Martin. I know you're a big movie guy. Sometimes casting can be ridiculous. She says 30 pounds. She got super strong. Her boobs got bigger, which did you see the picture? Did you see the picture I sent you of Sydney Sweeney in a brown wig playing Christy Martin? Is this movie going to be good?
I mean, Sydney Sweeney's banking on it. First of all, I know Christy Martin a little bit. We had her on a couple of the fight shows back in SiriusXM when I was there. I very much enjoyed speaking to her. She is a legend. Her story has been told in documentary form. But this is Sydney Sweeney, right? This is the big screen. This is Hollywood. I think Sweeney needs this. It gives me sort of like The Rock playing former UFC fighter and Pride champion Mark Kerr vibes, right? Like she's diving all into an extremely serious role. In Euphoria, she has been able to tackle serious subject matter. You know what I mean? She's been able to show range. She's been able to go out there and make you feel. She's got a big mountain to climb, though, with Christy Martin, right? Because of what a sex symbol she is, right? People, I think, are already counting her out, and she's just a pretty face. This is going to take, you know, some real... I don't know about the script. I know about the story. I don't know who's attached as director, but I will say this. I'm hoping it's good. I think it has the capability to be good, right? And I think for both boxing, Christy Martin and Sydney Sweeney, it could be a truly great film. I really, really hope it is.
I'm going Sydney Sweeney as Christy Martin over Christian Bale as Al Davis.
Ooh, that's a hot take.
That's risky.
Christian Bale is one of the greatest actors of our generation. So I don't think I'm going to agree with that. But if she can get like 80% Christian Bale, we got an Oscar contender on our hands. Because and Steve, I think you'll agree, the Christy Martin story, worthy of that.
Yeah, tremendous. Ryan McKinnell is with us. UFC 316, I mean, you warned us last week. I don't know if this is going to happen now, but the fight was not competitive. You said that you hope they don't ruin Sean O'Malley. Where does O'Malley go from here? He's got to leave the weight division, right? Can he survive at 145 pounds? Is he big enough? Can they match make? That's the biggest thing to build him up. No more grapplers and wrestlers.
He's done. I said it last week. Oh, no. He was going to get worked by Merab. I didn't like the lead up, the things that he was saying, changing his entire personality and the way that he lived life. And then he went on his podcast earlier this week and said, well, I'm going to smoke weed again, and I'm going to go to the club, and I'm going to drink. I'm going to tell everybody I'm not going to. But he's paid. He's rich. He's famous. He got his title. And I want to make this clear. Sugar Sean O'Malley is one of the most popular stars in the UFC, which is why I think they handled him so poorly in a time where they don't have stars. They needed him to be decent more than ever. But in Sean's defense, he has done more and accomplished more in the sport of mixed martial arts and made more money than 99.99% of anybody who has ever fought in that UFC octagon. He's 30 years old. He's reached the absolute mountaintop. And I just don't think he has the mental capacity to get back there and ever do it again. At best, if he wants to do this, he needs to take the Nate Diaz and at a different time, Nick Diaz sort of school of thought of super fights, the big money fights. He needs to get a couple, I don't want to say easy wins, because I don't think he'll ever have that sort of pick of the litter again, if you will, like to really truly go out and get a quote-unquote easy fight. But he needs to pick winnable fights. He needs to take control and the reins of his career, get his head right, take a year off, do whatever he needs to do to get mentally ready for the next 3 or 4 years of somewhat big fights, save his money, and figure out how he's going to live the next 30, 40 years of his life. Because even the best mixed martial artists of all time, they have to have side hustles, and they have to have retirement plans, because Dana White and the UFC do not pay. And that is going to be a problem going forward because they don't have stars now. And what are the stars going to be in 10 and 20 years? If you don't pay and you're the joke and the laughingstock of the sports world, which the UFC is, everybody knows they just give them scraps. Who in their right mind is going to train or want to be a professional fighter going forward? They are not going to be getting the best. They're not going to have the stars that they want. And eventually, people are going to see them for what they are, and people are just going to check out. It's already happening. So, in the case of Sean, I wish them the best.
Ryan McKendall's with us. I got two topics, 2 minutes, so we got to be quick on this. One, really good rage tweeting in the last few days. Very entertaining. Very important as well. I saw you go off on a buddy of Logan Paul. I don't know who this Mike Maljack was, but I guess he got up on a pedestal and was starting to lecture about what was going on in L.A.
Yeah. Yeah, he's Logan Paul's co-host. They obviously have a lot of influence as podcast hosts. Logan Paul, a WWE wrestler, part-time boxer. Mike is his co-host. He was trying to basically come around and talk about the things that have been going on with the sort of the ICE issues and people getting plucked off the streets without access. The issue is both Mike and Logan were hardcore Trumpers, bringing him on his show, right, and kind of ushering in some of the venom and some of the dangerous sort of situations that we're seeing right now. And my whole thought process, and it's not just for him and Logan Paul or anybody, don't try to get on the right side of history now. The damage is done. You helped usher this in and you helped normalize it. That's my real issue here. This is just a situation. It's been a rough week, right? I think we'll get through it, but a situation of basic human rights. And that goes back to even if you want to talk about the UFC and their pay structure, right? These are all common issues that are just, you know, you say stick to sports. Sports are a microcosm of our world at large, right? And our country. It's so much bigger than just wins and losses. And you know what I mean? And I saw a lot of this. Geraldo did this earlier today. He's like, it's wrong. You wanted this. This is what you voted for. Own it. We have no respect for you.
45 seconds, seriously. I think it's really important that Canelo and Crawford land at Allegiant Stadium. They've got to work out a deal, the promoters do, with the UNLV football to move the game off the day. But I think that fight here in Vegas needs to be at that stadium.
I agree, but I don't think they want that. I think they like the intimacy. Oh, if they do that at Allegiant, they're going to have to make cheaper tickets. I don't think they want to do that. I think they want to break gates. That's what TKO and Dana White, and that's what they're about, is getting these pumped up numbers. Oh, it was $25 million. Who cares? Who cares? I'm with you. I want everybody to be able to go 65,000 deep at Allegiant and enjoy it, Steve. So I hope, brother.
For the good of the city, and I also think the good of the sport, that you actually have draws that can, you know, draw 40 or 50,000 plus in a big stadium, and it would be just it's going to be a massive weekend anyway. All right, Ryan, I said I'm out of time, and then I'm going on and on. I appreciate it, and I will talk to you next week. Be healthy.
Yep, you too.
There he is. Ryan McKinnell. Follow him up online at Ryan McKinnell. He is almost on Fridays, but we bumped up a spot a little bit earlier this week. Got a giveaway on the way back. We're going to give away tickets to that Vegas charity softball game as the Raiders are going to be taking on the Golden Knights. So stick around. We'll do that coming out as Justin Watkins will join us. And if you don't have tickets for it already, battleforvegas.com. The game's on July 12th.